Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast, folks. I hope you are doing well. And in our conversation today, I'm going to be joined by Deb Dana. And Deb is one of the leading voices in the world about how do you apply the key insights from polyvagal theory to therapeutic practice, to coaches now. Deb is actually training a lot of coaches these days as well as therapists. So we're going to dive into what is polyvagal theory, what are some of the key principles, and most importantly, what does it mean for in application when you're working with people? All right, that all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Deb Dana. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Deb, yeah, great to be with you. I'm excited about our conversation. I was just saying before we hit the record button that I've been wanting to speak to you for a long time on the podcast. So now we've made it. And how are you doing, first of all?
I am well. It is, I'm in Maine, the state of Maine in the US, and I'm looking out the window and it is yet another dreary, rainy, cool day. So even though it's mid-July, I'm wearing a turtleneck. That gives you a clue to the environment around me. And I'm just feeling really warmed by the conversation we've had so far. It feels very heart connected. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah, great. Well, then I think I just outlined before, I'll just share that with the viewers. I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk about polyvagal theory and some of the key ideas from that. And then we'll talk about application. Mm-hmm. And I know your work is focused a lot for therapists and clinical practitioners, but you also, you said you're training a lot of coaches these days. And I think, you know, like you just said, a nervous system is a nervous system. So.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm delighted to be talking to your audience, and because I do think, you know, we all need to understand the principles of polyvagal theory, because no matter what way we're interacting with clients, we are interacting with their nervous systems. right? You can't get around that. You are working with their nervous systems. My nervous system and my client's nervous system are in a conversation. And I, for me, it feels like I should understand that conversation.
Right. Well, then let's just start with the kind of big idea of like what polyvagal theory is, you know, like how would you start explaining what it means?
And you know, you'd think I would have it down by now because I've been doing this for so long, but every time you know, I do something just a little bit different. So let's see where that goes today. But, you know, polyvagal theory, and first I want to just give, you know, honor, gratitude to Steve Porges for developing polyvagal theory. He's been a great collaborator and friend for me. So that's where we start. And I believe that the easiest way to think about it is it's a theory of how the autonomic nervous system works. And the autonomic nervous system is at the heart of our daily experience, right? Everything we do, our behaviors, our feelings, our thoughts, are connected to the nervous system. And so for me as a therapist, you know, I'd always been sort of a neuroscience geek. I loved thinking about the brain, understanding how it worked, because I thought, well, this is what I'm working with a client, the brain. And then I read Steve's work and I went, oh, wait a minute, I'm working with the mind body and I forgot the body part of it. I need to understand how that works, which led me to, you know, really diving into polyvagal theory. And for me, I just use three basic organizing principles when I think about polyvagal theory: neuroception, hierarchy, and co-regulation. So that's where I go. And I think if we understand those three, then we really understand how the nervous system works and we can work with it because we understand it and we can help our clients become active operators of their own nervous systems. That's really why I do this work, the application piece, because I want my clients to understand how to operate their nervous systems so that they are not dependent on coming to see me to navigate the challenges of life, right? They can come when the extraordinary challenges hit. But for the everyday ordinary and even some of the more extraordinary, if you understand your nervous system, you have a roadmap to what do I need? How do I find safety and regulation? What has to happen? So, you know, we're talking about our clients, the people we work with, but it begins here with us, right? Mm. So really when I'm teaching workshops, I tell people, you think you're coming to learn how to apply this in your clinical work. You're really coming to learn how to friend your own nervous system first, because unless you do that, you can't use this with clients. Polyvagal theory is not a cognitive experience. You have to understand it, the principles this way, but it lives inside you and it's a way that you move through daily living.
Right. Yeah. I think later on, I'd love to talk about how we can actually attune to our clients, you know, by doing that work, befriending our nervous system. But maybe it's good first to ask you about those three kind of organizing principles. I don't know which one you would start with.
Yeah, first. You know, it's interesting. I usually go neuroception, hierarchy, co-regulation. And every time I get to co-regulation, I think, oh, I probably should have started there, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go neuroception, hierarchy, co-regulation. So if we start with neuroception, that's the word that Steve created to describe how the nervous system is taking in information, because the nervous system connects with your cortex, but it begins in your brainstem. And so it works out of your conscious awareness below the thinking level of your brain moment to moment. So, you know, every micro moment we're alive, your nervous system is doing this process of neuroception, taking in through three streams of awareness, taking in through listening inside your body to your heart rate, your breath, your lungs, your digestion, your viscera, getting information. And then it's listening outside in the environment around us and then between. So it's listening in the relational field between nervous systems. So inside, outside, between. And as it does that, it's taking in things that feel like a welcome and things that feel like a warning, right? So cues of safety and unsafety. And neuroception then prompts a move along the hierarchy, which takes us to this second organizing principle, which is the hierarchy, which was Steve's brilliant creation, his development of understanding the nervous system through the hierarchy in polyvagal theory. And it's called polyvagal because there are two vagal pathways, which was his contribution to this. And so the hierarchy has three states, you know, three discrete states that we then blend and have flavors of. But we think about the three states. At the top of the hierarchy is ventral, which is the state of safety, connection, healthy homeostasis. We're organized enough to move through the world. We're safe enough. And we want to connect through four pathways: to self, to others, to the world, and to spirit, right? And all that comes out of this ventral pathway. We have passion and purpose, and you know, it's you can feel it when I'm talking about it. It is a good place to be, right? It's the place where we are physically and psychologically healthy. We experience well-being there. And then we have two survival states that go in a specific order. When we leave ventral, when the world feels too challenging, too dangerous, too overwhelming, we go to the sympathetic nervous system, which is the system of mobilization and fight and flight, right? And so when your neuroception gets too many warnings from inside, outside, between, it's going to then take you to sympathetic and to that activation of fight and flight. And if that doesn't solve the problem, so to speak, your neuroception is going to get even increasingly dangerous or move into life threat, right? And then your nervous system is going to take you to dorsal, which is the other aspect of the vagus, dorsal vagal. And that is a place of shutdown, collapse, loss of energy, not enough energy to care, going through the motions, but not really here, all of those flavors of shutdown, right? And that predictable hierarchy makes it helpful for us to understand, where am I and how do I find my way back to the top of the hierarchy? How do I find my way back to ventral? So from sympathetic, I have to organize that overwhelming energy in some way. And as I organize that energy and engage with it differently, I can move back up to ventral. From dorsal, where I now have a huge lack of energy in my system, the hierarchy lets me know that from dorsal, I have to move through sympathetic to get to ventral. And as we move through sympathetic, we want to stay out of fight and flight survival energy and connect with the mobilizing energy that can be found in sympathetic. And that pulls us back up to ventral, right? So this lovely hierarchy tells us both how we evolved, because it's how it was created across evolution. It's also how in the womb we develop. Dorsal develops first, then sympathetic, and around 30 weeks on, ventral. So it's how we develop as a fetus. So it tells us how we evolve, and it tells us how we dissolve, right? So we know we can help our clients understand, well, this is what is happening. We can help ourselves understand, oh, wait a minute. You know, I just left ventral and wow, now I know where I am, right? And so it's a good roadmap in that way. So that was neuroception and hierarchy that mixed together. And then we come to co-regulation, that third organizing principle. Co-regulation is a biological imperative, meaning we don't survive unless we have it. Right. And, you know, think about when you came into the world, you know, your longing, your autonomic nervous system's longing was to be met by a nervous system that was regulated, that was anchored in ventral and could welcome you with that connection. Right. For many people, that didn't happen. Right. Or it happened and then it got interrupted. Right. But that longing for connection with safe others is a lifelong pursuit. Right. And what happens if we have enough of that, enough safe experiences of connection, then we build self-regulation. So co-regulation then builds self-regulation. If you came into the world and you didn't have that predictably regulated nervous system around you, right, then you probably had to self-regulate, because there wasn't anyone around to co-regulate with. And so it's out of order in that way. And so sometimes the missing experiences in safe co-regulation, and we have to find those experiences as we grow. as we become adults. And you know, I'm 68, so I'm at this other end of my you know, lifeline, my timeline of my life. I still need co-regulation, and perhaps need it even more now, because I'm in a place where it can feel overwhelming to be doing everything on my own, right? So, you know, it's an interesting place to be. And then to think, who do we create for our co-regulating people, right? Who are your people? You know, and for many of our clients, they don't have people, right? We're their person. We're the person that they can co-regulate with in the beginning. And so, again, the responsibility, why we have to understand our nervous system, is in order to be regulating for you, I have to be regulated myself.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've often seen that in my coaching clients, that they come in a kind of stressed or agitated state. And one of the things we're doing together is through my presence and acceptance of them, they begin to become more aligned and regulated, and then they access a certain kind of innate resilience and wisdom.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because as you are anchored in your ventral, right, you are sending through your neuroception, through that between pathway, you are sending that information to their nervous system. You're also saying things, which is lovely, but you're sending in this other communication that is the one that we want to pay attention to. And as they begin to feel that and their system begins to regulate, they have access to this innate wisdom, which is, I think, in our nervous system all the time. They also have access to their prefrontal cortex, because from that place of ventral regulation, prefrontal then is fully online and active. When we go to a survival energy, whether it's sympathetic or dorsal, our prefrontal no longer works in the way that it does when we're regulated. So there's that mind-body connection is so, you know, intertwined. Yeah.
And it strikes me as being quite a very compassionate theory, in the sense of, I think a lot of people can feel very judgmental when they're getting stressed out, and then they can't just, you know, click back into place. But actually what you're saying, it sounds like, well, the neuroception, a lot of this is happening below conscious thought and awareness, and it's kind of automatic.
Yeah. Yes. And so we have to, you know, part of our work when we're bringing this into our work is to bring perception to neuroception, right? So that we stop and go, oh, what's happening? Where am I? Right. And, you know, we have various ways to map our system so that I sort of can land and say, oh, here's where I am. Right. But what you're saying is it's a very compassionate, because it's non-pathologizing. It's non-shaming, non-blaming way of being with myself and with others, right? Because if I look across the room and my client is you know, either really suffering with agitated, you know, can't, you know, overwhelming anxiety or anger, which are both sympathetic, or is in that place of just looking like they're not really here, or they don't even want to be here, I can look, and instead of making a story or a meaning or a moral meaning about it, I can simply say, oh, that's a dysregulated nervous system, right? What does that system need in this moment to feel safe enough, welcomed enough to come into connection? Because the nervous system truly is always talking to us, right? In the behaviors of your clients, in the things they say, in the things they tell you they're feeling, in their symptoms. Whatever their symptoms are, that's the nervous system saying, here's what's going on, please listen.
What kind of symptoms? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of symptoms?
So you know, if you think about people who keep losing jobs, people who use substances, people who spend all day binge watching a TV show, right? Some of the simple things we hear all the time, right? That's the nervous system trying to tell you something, right? And if we start by trying to work with the symptom, then we're forgetting that the symptom is just the story the nervous system is telling you. So we need to go underneath the symptom and listen to that story, because if the nervous system can become more regulated, those symptoms are going to change, right? Because they're no longer needed, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You said that you can map where somebody is, and how do you begin to do that? And I'd love to talk about that in the context of, you know, it sounds like there's both a kind of short-term activation, you know, in that maybe somebody picks up some cues in the immediate environment, and then they move through these sphere, these different levels. But then I'm imagining over time, people can get like attuned to being in a certain place more easily. And you know, and then within the kind of context of the world we're in right now, where there's just increased stressors and anxiety. So how do you help people map where they are and begin to work with that? Yeah.
So, you know, when I first tried to figure out how am I going to bring Steve's brilliant science into my office, sitting with a client, and I will say that I think I drove my colleagues crazy because I was talking polyvagal all the time, and they kept saying, "That's really interesting. What do I do with it?" So then it came the "What do I do with it?" And that for me became the autonomic ladder, which is where I began. So I have a ladder map that that I use to help clients understand their three states. And ventral is at the top of the ladder, sympathetic's in the middle, and dorsal's at the bottom. So it represents the hierarchy. And I like a ladder because it shows the flavors, the different rungs that you go up and down. It's not just a, oh, I'm here and then here. It's, oh, I can feel myself going down and up the ladder. And yes, once we've mapped that, our home, what I like to say is our home, we all have a home in ventral, right? Because that's where the nervous system, I think, longs to be. It's where we have healthy homeostasis. It's for our well-being. I think our nervous systems know how to get there. We just have to uncover the pathways that they're built in. They get covered up by experience because the nervous system is shaped by our experience, right? You know, then familiar cues take us to these, you know, survival states. And that gets wired in as well. So we have the home and ventral. And then I like what you're saying about the current state of the world, which has been helpful in some ways in helping people understand. We also have a home away from home, right? In one of those survival states. So for me, my home away from home is dorsal, right? And if we think about the hierarchy, I know that when I leave ventral, I have to go through sympathetic before I end up in dorsal, but I go very quickly through sympathetic. I do not spend much time there. My system takes me right down the ladder to dorsal. And that was wired in, you know, long, long ago as a young kid. My system decided this is the safe place in your growing up world because you can become sort of invisible, fly under the radar, not be seen. Right. So that's been my lifelong, long pattern. I don't go there anywhere near as often as I used to because I've shaped my system in a way that, you know, as long as I'm paying attention and as long as I'm nourishing my system and resourcing it in the way that it's telling me it needs, I don't go to dorsal very often, but it's always there as my ultimate rescue, right? When the world is totally overwhelming, you can find me totally disconnected somewhere, right? How about you? Where's your home away from home?
It's a good question. I mean, I certainly recognize the sympathetic, the arousal, you know, getting maybe angry and stressed, you know, trying to solve problems and speedy kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. 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 So that might be where you ride out the warning, you know, in that sympathetic action taking place. Right. Yeah. So, you know, we help people identify what's your home away from home. And then we get to know it, you know, because it's not a question of not going there. Right. Well-being is not being always in ventral regulation. That is not well-being. Well-being is knowing when I have been taken into a survival state and having pathways to bring me back. Right. And for me, that is a resilient system. That's resilience. Right. That there's this move out of regulation and back into regulation. And for many of our clients, what happens, why they suffer, is because they get pulled out and they get stuck there, right? So it's not that we're not going to get pulled out. We get pulled out all the time in little ways and then in big ways, you know, sometimes. And everybody over the course of this past 18 months has really noticed that, you know, the every day just happens over and over and over, and sooner or later it's overwhelming and we get stuck somewhere, you know. And so the work has been to how do I find my way back? I have to keep coming back and having, you know, what I call a critical mass of ventral vagal energy alive and active in my system. Doesn't mean that I don't have the other flavors too. So right now, if I stopped and listened in, I have a lot of ventral and negative ventral, because you're a delight to talk with and be with. And our social engagement systems are connecting and it feels good. And in the background, I can feel the familiar dorsal flavor. Right. And that's okay. It's just there. That's okay. Right. It's not that I don't want it to go away. You know, I can even send it a bit of gratitude. Right. Go ahead.
Sorry. How do you feel it? Like, is it like, is it a sensation or,
So for me, the ventral is a very, you know, I can feel my energy and I can feel this flow going back and forth. And if I listen to my dorsal is a place of emptiness, right? And it's a place of retreat where everything around me goes away. And what we want to remember, because that could sound good to some people, right? So what we want to remember about dorsal is it rescues you from the overwhelm that's in the world, but it doesn't nourish your nervous system. You don't get restored by being there, right? You get restored by being in a place that has ventral where you can be still and relaxed and reflect. But this dorsal experience where you are taken away can feel relieving, but it doesn't feel filling. So we just want to make sure people understand that piece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off before. I don't know if you remember where you're at, but I get curious then how you would support somebody, how we can actually begin to move through those different systems back up to the ventral.
Yeah. Yeah. So sympathetic, let's start there, because we often go ventral, sympathetic, ventral many times a day in some flavor of sympathetic survival, right? You know, there's enough cues of danger so that my sympathetic system begins to pump cortisol and adrenaline, and you can feel that. And sympathetic is that place of should or have to, I must, I need, and you can feel it as I'm talking, you can feel it begin to, you know, and it either comes in flavors of anxiety or flavors of anger, right? And there's a spectrum along that continuum of sympathetic. And so if you notice, I'm feeling that flavor of sympathetic where I am going too fast and I can't think and I'm going around in circles, right? Then if you feel that in the very beginning, it's easier to find your way back to ventral, right? So when you can notice that, you say, okay, what do I do to organize this energy, right? Because the energy is disorganized. The movement usually looks chaotic, disorganized, right? And it might be something as simple as getting up and walking to a destination, because that's going to organize your energy. In order to go from here to there, I have to organize my body. It has to move in a certain way. Or it could be as simple as turning on some music and singing along, right? Because I have to be organized in some way. It's all about organizing. Because the energy of sympathetic is chaotic, overwhelming, disorganized. So we just want to organize. There's so many different ways to do that. The way that is more difficult is a cognitive way. So like if I'm your client and I'm, you know, in this dysregulated, disorganized, sympathetic place, and you notice that, talking to my prefrontal is probably not your best bet. Because my prefrontal isn't listening in that moment, right? You know, so inviting me to, you know, whatever, you know, let's get up and move, or let's go for a walk, or, you know, how about if we, you know, sing along to a song, whatever it's going to be. And the thing that I invite you to do is front load that. So plan that when I'm ventral and talk about, let's play around with. It's fun to experiment. You know, this kind of work is all a big experiment anyway, right? So let's experiment and see, what do you think would help when you're feeling some of that, you know, right? Would it help to for us to move together, right? You know, or would it help to play some music so you can feel the beat? Or would it help to have some certain images that we pull up on the screen that feel that way? There are lots of ways to do that. Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me that you, because I wonder about things like the breath or even just presence, you know, so becoming aware and how that might create that sense of organization.
Yeah. So let's talk about presence first. Your ability to be anchored and ventral and send that energy to me so that my neuroception feels it is important. And in sympathetic, the energy you're sending, your ventral energy, needs to have its own energy and activity to it. Because if you send me your very kind, slow, connecting, gentle coach's energy, and I'm in a sympathetic, you know, disorganized, chaotic place, my nervous system is probably not going to get the message.
Gotcha.
Right? So what I need you to do is send me ventral care, connection, but with some oomph behind it. Say, you know, so your words, rather than saying, oh, I'm right here with you, need to be, wow, I can really feel there's a lot of energy going on here right now. And I'm here with you. Let's explore it together. Something like that. You can feel the difference, right? And then in dorsal, you want more of that gentle, because in dorsal, the experience of being is one of being lost, alone, abandoned, where no one's ever going to find you, right? It's an untethered floating thing. And so when you're in dorsal, I might just simply say, I'm right here with you. And I'm going to stay here as long as we need. And I'm sending you ventral. Can your nervous system feel it? I don't talk to the brain because your brain's not there. Can you feel it? It's a crazy question. Can your nervous system feel it? Is a better entry in, right? But you could feel the very different energy, right? Yeah. And then breath, because breath is a portal to changing state. It's an autonomic activity. It's controlled by your nervous system, and we can manipulate it. It's one of the few things that is an autonomic experience that we also can manipulate. And breath is a powerful regulator. It's also a powerful activator. So we want to be very careful with clients. And it's something we want to play around with and experiment with when they are anchored and feeling curious. Because, you know, and I always say to a client, you know, let's just start by noticing the breath, right? And even noticing can be too much. But let's start by noticing. Right. And then what we know generally is if you extend the inhale, you come back to more ventral. Right. And if you bring more breath in, you bring more energy in. So if I'm in dorsal, I may want to bring more breath in.
Oh, yeah. Right? And then extending the exhale for the ventral.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And sighing, which is something I teach and I love to teach. So let's talk about sighing. Sighing, the research on sighing says that it is a gentle reset of both your nervous system and your brain activity, right? Isn't that fascinating? And we sigh spontaneously many times an hour. So, you know, I talk to clients and I say, it's something you do anyway, right? So, you know, we might begin by just noticing when you sigh. But let's play with sighing, right? So when you're in a dorsal, hopeless despair, you have a sigh of despair, right? And as you sigh in that despairing place, it's a momentary reset. It's an interruption of that place in your nervous system. In sympathetic, we have a sigh of frustration, right? Or sigh of anger or sigh of anxiety. Again, it's an interruption. And then when we reach ventral, we have a sigh of relief. And then when we stay there, we have a sigh of contentment. And what I do with clients is I just practice those four kinds of sighing. You know, we imagine, you know, we're together, we're regulated. Let's imagine what a sigh of despair, a hopeless sigh might sound like. You know, and again, what we want to do is we want to do it when we don't need it, right? We want to do it when we're feeling ventral enough so that we can play with these things. And then when my client goes to that state, I'm going to say, oh, let's give a sigh of despair together. right? And again, it's that together because we want to co-regulate, right? I don't say, why don't you try to sigh in despair? I say, oh, let's do that together. Let's sigh in despair together, right? And that begins to, it lets them know I'm right here with you. And it also is a shared activity, and it's going to interrupt for a moment the depth of that disconnection, right? I don't understand sympathetic as well in an embodied way because it's not my place, right? And yet, boy, do I love to sigh with frustration with my clients. It is such fun. So you and I could have fun sighing with frustration, right? And then that, you know, I think what we forget is we want to honor and savor and celebrate when we're in ventral. So that sigh of relief, oh, look, we arrived back in ventral. Right. And then a sigh of contentment when we stay there. Right. And that's the piece as coaches, as therapists, we forget when we're working with the dysregulation. We forget that we have to really savor the regulation. Right. That's important. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of helps us to reinforce it and, you know, maybe even extend it or increase it in some way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and that's shaping your pathways, right? I mean, and I like to sit, talk about this explicitly with my clients. So I like to tell them, I'm going to narrate this for your nervous system as we go through, right? And so as they begin to come back to life, oh, there, your nervous system is bringing just a spark of energy, right? As they are, as we're in ventral again, wow, look at that. We just navigated all the way back to this place of safety. How wonderful is that? So really putting it out there in explicit language, because what we're talking about are implicit processes that are happening all the time. And unless we bring them into explicit awareness, we can't really work with them in the way that we want.
There's something I wanted to ask you about images, because you said, and is that related to a cue? Like as in an image is a cue that can displays a sign of safety or connection. Yep. Just curious about that.
And I love images. I'm an image and kind of thinker, and some people image does not work at all. For me, I do love image, and so I often will collect images from the websites where you can collect free images. That there are a couple that artists upload their images free for you to use, which I think are lovely. And so I'm always collecting images and then sharing them in my workshops. Used to share them with clients and just, you know, say, here's what this did for my system. This represents sympathetic for me. Where does that land in your system? Because that's the curiosity, because what's sympathetic for me might be ventral to you or dorsal, right? I don't know. This is all, this again is, I need to understand my system and then be curious about yours. And I would then also invite clients, and I invite people in my workshops to create their own set of images and share them, right? Because if my client brings me their images, you know, it's fun. They'll say, so here are my sympathetic images. And I'll look through them and go, ooh, yes, not, no, my system goes here. It's this lovely joining as humans, you know, and understanding how nervous systems are different and dissimilar. And for my client to really get to know their system through image, which, you know, for many of them is a good way. Music is the other. I have clients create musical playlists, right? You know, what are songs that are ventral inspired for you? And then what are songs that really bring your sympathetic and dorsal to life, right? So that you could, if you're in a sympathetic place, you could turn this song on and you could be with your sympathetic and really feel it, or the same with dorsal. There's magic in music, you know, there really is. So these are all the ways that if you understand the organizing principles, you get creative, right? Mm. How else might we get to know your nervous system, right?
Mm. Yeah, I love that. So over time, you're sort of learning your own unique kind of a flavor of these systems, and you know, becoming more sensitive to them, and perhaps being able to make more and more refined discernments about how they're showing up for you, and which then is empowering you, because then you can, you know, you're more sensitive to when they're happening.
Yeah, and I like how you said, you know, the flavors, because if I know where I am on the continuum of sympathetic, you know, am I just entering in am I, you know, at a midpoint, am I fully immersed? You know, if I know where I am along that pathway, along that continuum, then I can, you know what do I need to do? Because if I'm just entering in, you know, it'll take much less for me to come back to ventral than if I'm fully immersed, right? So knowing more precisely where I am is a lovely way. An image can help us, you know, do that. You know, we can create a continuum of all the flavors of your vent, of your sympathetic, through a whole series of images, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating to give people options of how do you want to get to know your system. Here's where your system, here's the biology of this system. How do you want to bring it to life? Right. And trying to find multiple ways. I don't know. What would you bring? Are you an image or a movement or a music or?
Well, I just thinking this year, I had a point in the year where it was very challenging for me. And I kind of definitely had spent long periods of my time in the sympathetic and the dorsal, I think. And I actually instinctively started to do things that supported me. So I actually made a playlist of music that was very touching to me. And it, you know, it just seemed to, it's funny because without knowing what you're sharing now, it was like I selected the music that just seemed to hit the right spot for me and bring something out of me. And I would often listen to that walking in nature as well. So I started to combine them. Yeah. And it makes me think about these protocols as we get more and more sophisticated with this. I imagine we could create these really sophisticated attuned protocols for people that could help them shift rapidly, maybe even using things like virtual reality or, artificial intelligence. I don't know. But
I know, it's just fascinating to see where it can go, isn't it? I like what you did because, and I think what you say is so true. We intuitively know to reach for something. You know, it's the same as in our work. We intuitively know what to do, and this theory and this way of exploring it just puts the science underneath what you're already doing. So, you know, you knew music was important, and so you created a playlist, and then you added walking, which is this gentle movement to keep you out of shutdown and to organize your movement in nature. And the research on nature says that nature is a pretty predictable regulator of our nervous system, right? So you intuitively put three together, and now knowing the science behind it, you might then go on to create some specific things that you would do if you felt yourself moving into that sympathetic state. You rather than just, you know, sort of falling into it, right? You now can say, oh, here are some ways I'm going to work on this and combine this and see what works for me. So that's where we're heading, which is beautiful, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I could see this kind of thing being taught in schools to children. And even in the way we design our buildings and things like that, I could imagine there's an application here that our environments are attuned to our nervous systems and vice versa, which they probably already are anyway, but
and it's interesting because we have to be careful because, you know, we talk about when we get multiple nervous systems together in one space, they have different responses to different elements in that space, mm-hmm. right? So we want to be careful not to say, you know, this is going to be ventral for everybody because I haven't found that thing yet, you know,
right.
Even nature, right? What kind of nature, where in nature, what are the elements of nature that bring you the most ventral joy? I live in Maine and I live by the beach, and that the ocean is for me the place in nature. You know, I like mountains, I like forests, but they don't do the same thing for me. How about you?
Well, I was just at the beach and, you know, there's something about swimming in the sea that it just makes me start laughing and
I love it.
So it's like a kind of, that's the like premier, mm-hmm. especially if it's a beautiful coastline as well.
So then what I do is I collect beach stones, right? And they become my ventral, anchors that I can hold on to. I have collections of them, you know, around the house. And when I'm having a particularly challenging day, I might grab a stone and put it in my pocket or carry it with me. So it kind of, you can see how we can connect things and build on them, right? So, you know, if I'm in an environment, you're building me a space, I want it to have some elements of that feel like ocean. But my colleague, you know, really loves forests. And so ocean would be okay for her, and she needs some elements that would remind her of forest. So it's just, this is the lesson of the nervous system, is that we know nature is a regulator. And then within that, each person is going to have a different element in nature that really brings that alive for them. So we want to be curious about that. Right.
Someone likes looking at cute cat pictures, and the other one's like, this like hates the cats, you know.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say sounds, because I was just listening. There's somebody hammering out there in the, you know, out there in the neighborhood. Sounds are very regulating and activating, right? And so if you create a sound environment. You know, we call it a soundscape. If you create a soundscape, if you know what sounds, they're called sound marks, what sound marks make up a soundscape that brings you a sense of ventral, you know, that welcome, that, you know, whatever, however you describe it, then you can begin to create that too. And for you, music was a sound that helped, right? Specific sounds. For me, it is as well, the sound of the sea. You know, when I worked in an office, we all had the sound machines outside our doors for privacy. And at the end of the day, when you turned the sound machines off, my nervous system went, oh, thank God. You know, it was like, just, oh, all day long. You know, so it's interesting to think about sounds as well.
Yeah. No, it gives me a lot of creativity around, you know, the way we can, everything, we're perceiving everything all the time, and that's impacting us sub-perceptually. And I get curious about, you know, you work with clients, and when you work with them, I just get curious unpacking that. Like, are they coming to you because they want to work with you for a period of time, you know, say 6 months or a year, and they, you know, are you then working with them on helping them kind of become more resilient by perhaps retoning their nervous system from adverse childhood experiences? Is it really just about giving them key distinctions, and so they can go away and practice themselves? I'm just kind of like wondering where you go with them.
Yeah. So for me, it's a both and, because I will say, you know, I am not seeing clients individually any longer. I saw my last client at the end of 2020. Now, because now I, you know, teach and train and do workshops, and the joy I get is doing demos in a workshop, because I am a clinician and I love clinical practice, and so that's what I get to do. But when I was practicing, I'm a complex trauma specialist, and so my clients would come to me with a very complicated nervous system and complicated living situation. And what I would say, and what I, you know, think we all should say if we're working in this way, is, you know, this presenting problem is what we call it, the presenting problem, the thing that brought you here because you are so suffering, or in many cases, the people around you are suffering and they've sent you here, right? I worked with a lot of people who were involved with the law. And so they were sent to therapy, right? So for whatever reason you've ended up here, if we might take that and put it over on the side and work here, work to understand and begin to bring regulation to your nervous system, and then take this problem back and look at it, we're going to be able to work with it in a much different way. Right. Because if I'm trying to work with someone who, you know, has gotten into trouble with the legal system because of anger issues, right, whether it's domestic violence or, you know, property damage, whatever it is, you know, if I don't help them first regulate their nervous system, then I'm working against their biology. Right. It's like, you know, much of my work in the beginning of my clinical work was working with people who had sexually offended. It's one of the programs that I worked in. And back then, you know, before we really, you know, trusted this and had other ways of working with it, what you were doing is you were creating with a person relapse prevention plan, right? Which really meant here's the box you have to live within, right? You have to stay in there, which was a crazy thing to do, because once you tell a nervous system it has to only do these four things, it feels trapped and it's going to bring survival energy, right? So then when we started saying, okay, if we could help you regulate your nervous system, your life's going to look very different. And we can then figure out what's the safety plan from there, right? So, it, you know, it changes everything. It changes how we look at the work we're doing, whether it's work with people who have harmed others, work with people who are suffering, work with people who simply are trying to figure out how do I navigate this life in a more healthy way, right? Those, the ways that are not working, again, are the symptoms the nervous system is sending you. And so if we can regulate, bring more ventral to their system and to their daily experience, then we can work with those things that brought them. And it's, the story is going to be different. What they, the options that they create are amazing things I would never think about. But my client goes, oh, I think I'm going to try this. And wow, I never would have thought about that. But their nervous system knows. And once you give it the platform of ventral to hold it, they will do, you know, really wonderful things with that. And then I become more of the guide. So in the beginning, I'm sort of helping them learn to shape, and then I become a guide. And then if there is some, you know, complex trauma that is stuck and needs to be processed, you know, then there are other models of therapy that you might use to do that. But as I, you know, I tell my colleagues who are trained in all of these, you know, very wonderful trauma processing models, you got to remember, no matter what model you're using, you're working with your client's nervous system. That comes first.
Yeah. So is that, yeah, I'm getting really fascinating now. So basically, if you do a lot of that complex trauma work, but the person's nervous system is pretty dysregulated, then, you know, it's not going to, you know, you're not going to have much effect, because they've not got any strength in the system. But actually, if you help someone learn to regulate their nervous system and increase the kind of flexibility in it, if that's the right way to say it, then maybe a lot of those issues then start to go away, because suddenly they can rely on that, call on that when they need it.
Yeah, and that brings up two things. One, many clients would get to the point where they felt more regulated, more in control, and able to manage the moments they were pulled into survival and find their way back. And they would say, okay, I think I'm done. Never touched the past traumatic experiences in any explicit way. They said, I'm good. Beautiful. And then other clients would reach that point and say, oh, okay, now, you know, I want to look at that traumatic experience that I had. And what we find is when you can anchor in ventral, have enough ventral alive and active in the system, you can then be informed by your past traumatic experiences rather than relive them, right? You can reflect on them. You can learn from them. I can go visit sympathetic and dorsal, which is where the trauma is held. The trauma doesn't live in ventral, right? But if I'm anchored in ventral, I can go to sympathetic and dorsal and be with those traumatic memories, those traumatic moments, and do something with them, but only from that anchor in ventral. Yeah.
Right. Is that where, yeah, in a sense of ventral, then you have the presence, the compassion that can actually be with that trauma in a way that can allow it to be seen and to integrate. I'm thinking of like internal family systems type, you know, whatever approach it is that you can actually be with it.
Yes. Yeah. And not only can my client be with it, but I can be with my client as we're both with it. So again, that comes back to that co-regulation piece, because, you know, for those of us who hold traumatic moments, the longing is to be witnessed. Right. And witnessing is an interesting experience. I can witness my own experience, and you and I can witness together. That's the whole of what's needed. Right. So, you know, it's a different way of listening. Right. It's a deep listening. We're with the experience and listening in that way, both me to my system and you and me together. So that I know that you're witnessing me and with me. So yeah, it's a lovely joining process.
And then I guess that makes me think of then that in that co-regulation and that joining, the role of I've heard you use the word curiosity, and that because I like this, it's like the way I get you talking, hear you talking about it is it's not like clinical. I mean that in the sense of like, we're going to apply this 5-step process, machine like, but actually there's a kind of curiosity and a presence to what's emerging and the unknown in some ways. Does that feel right?
That's beautiful. Yes. And, you know, for some therapists, some coaches, some people in this work, that can feel dangerous because I don't have these 7 steps to follow. Right. And so the shift is to say you're just staying in the conversation with the nervous system. Right. I sometimes, tell people in my workshops, what you're going to do is you're going to go on an autonomic adventure with your client. And you don't know where you're going, but you're taking ventral with you, so it's okay, right? That really is the experience. As long as I'm anchored, I'm just curious, and I have no agenda. My agenda, yes, I have an agenda, but my agenda is to help my client feel safe enough, have enough of their own ventral, and feel mine, so that we can explore. But when the agenda becomes, oh, we have to resolve that, event or resolve that pattern or change something, that's a sympathetically driven need on my part. And it's going to transmit to my client's nervous system that I am not just there with, ready to go with, and they're going to go into a survival response. And you can see where that takes us, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
I love this because I think this is something I hear about that I think is just an underlying principle of, I don't know what I'd call it, like transformation or regulation, which is like dropping the change agenda, and I hear it spoken about from so many perspectives, but this is from the polyvagal perspective of like, if you've got an agenda with your client in any way, or if the client has an agenda with themselves, there's a kind of aggression in that. And it's actually going to hinder that unfoldment, that organic unfoldment into the ventral.
Yeah, right. Because that agenda comes with a activated energy, right? And then if without ventral, change can't happen. Truly, what happens when you go to sympathetic or dorsal, your nervous system then closes to change. It's going to take you into one of your familiar survival stories, and you're stuck in that story. Right. So the only way out is to bring the ventral energy that brings possibility and options and hope and all of that. And when we have that, then, then things change. And that's the moment when you help a client sort of understand, oh, yes, something little changed, then you get them to want to do it some more. Right. Not this great big huge change, because that's really not how the nervous system works. It doesn't work by doing this practice that has this monumental shift, although sometimes we do feel a visceral and embodied nervous system before and after. Most of the time, it's a very gentle, tiny steps along the way that we're tracking. And then at some point, there's a tipping point where, oh, this feels really different, right? Mm-hmm. And that's our job, is to just notice those little shifts along the way that get us to this point where, oh, huh, I really did that differently, right? Yeah, yeah.
And I guess one comment, I'd love to, in a moment, just ask you about where we can find out more about your work. And also, if to know you're going to be teaching in the neuroscience of change and what you'll be talking about there. But just one reflection that came up was this sense of in leadership, and I mean, in a way, by leadership, all of us right now, we're in a kind of leadership dojo, that this practice of being attuned to ourselves and learning to attune to what's emerging and uncertainty, mm-hmm. and staying in the ventral whilst that's happening is just a fundamental practice, it sounds like.
Yeah, this time we're in globally, for all sorts of reasons that have come together. And we can see the polarization that's taking place in the world. through the lens of the nervous system, we can talk about that polarization as the incredible number of people who are in a sympathetic, activated fight or an activated flight. And then the other huge group of people who have gone to a dorsal, give up, no hope, can't care, right? And that's biology. That's not people making a decision that I'm going to be angry and fight, or I'm going to, you know, give up. That's your nervous system taking you to that state. And then out of that state, those stories emerge. And the only way we are going to be able to really even have conversations that we need to have and make the change that we need to make, and even figure out what that is when there's enough ventral in the world to offer those cues of safety and welcome so that people can feel safe enough to engage and do that, right? And when I think about it, it can feel overwhelming. Like, how do I possibly do that? How do I get all these people to ventral? And so if we bring it back to its lowest common denominator, and the nervous system is the common denominator we all share, we can do it one nervous system at a time. We can do it starting with our nervous system, and then we send cues of safety and welcome out into the world, and that finds another nervous system. And another nervous system can begin to feel that and send that on. Because this connection, we are inextricably connected, all of us humans, through our nervous systems. And think about that as a beautiful communication pathway to send an invitation for ventral connection.
Hell yeah, Deb. Like, I just think that's a beautiful place to bring this conversation to a close. I've said this a lot on this podcast, and I think it's true for therapists too, but I think coaches have an important role to play in these times for that reason that you just named, that, you know, one client at a time, and it can ripple out, and that, you know, then there's a sea change happening where more people access mm-hmm. ventral. So, you know, I think this is a beautiful thing to say.
And that brings us to a sense of hope, right? When we can feel pretty hopeless, you know, Steve talked about benevolence and I love that term, benevolence. And benevolence is not only am I in ventral, but I'm using ventral, but benevolence is the active, ongoing, intentional use of ventral vagal energy in service of healing, right? So I can be in ventral and I can use my ventral in service of healing. So that's the invitation for all of us.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I feel that sense of hope right now, you know. I hope that people listening feel that too, and maybe it's happening right now, you know, through your sound, through our voice, and through the co-regulation of us in connection, and the community of practitioners that listen to this podcast around the world. Also, I'd love to ask you about the neuroscience of change. You're going to teach a little bit on that. What are you going to talk about in your session? Do you know that yet? I know you've only signed up to that. You might not know.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to kind of figure out what would be the best right. fit. What would be most appreciated? So I don't know yet. And I will say I do love creating workshops, and I love the different flavors we can give a workshop to meet the particular need in the moment and the audience. So I don't know yet.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to tune into that one. And where can we find out more about your work?
My website, rhythmofregulation.com. And I'm excited because my team, we just redesigned the website. So I'm enjoying it again. You know how you do a redesigning. Oh, I really do like this. I love the images. I love it has a ventral energy feeling to it for me. So, and it may not for other people, but for me, it's like, okay, I like my website. So rhythmofregulation.com.
Great, great. And I also recommend people listening, check out your books as well. I found those to be very informal, informational, very inspiring. So
thank you.
Informal is not the right word I'm looking for, but
well, it's not bad. What I mean. It really is meant to be sort of an easy translation to, you know, so that people are welcomed in and don't have to understand the deep science, but get the science. So I like informal. It's fine with me.
All right, cool. Thanks, Dev.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May.